and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina, and I'm super excited today because we've got a great podcast lined up for you this week. Want to first welcome in my co-host. You know him, you love him, Scott Chu. How's it going?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to be talking about baseball again because work has been terrible, but this stuff is always good, right? Like, Tigers are winning games somehow, one way or another. And again, not at work. So just thrilled.
Yes. And super stoked. We have a special guest with us that's going to join us this week. Shelly Verstrate. And it's amazing that she was able to take the time out of her busy schedule to hang out with us today. Shelly writes for Pitcher List. She also writes for the Red Sox blog, overthemonster.com. She's an editor at Dynasty Guru. You can hear her on Dynasty's Child podcast. She's an MLB prospects expert. She's agreed to impart some of her knowledge with us today. Shelly, how's it going?
It's going great. It's a nice early Sunday morning. It's nice and sunny out here. So again, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for taking the time out. And here in the New York area, it's the second day where we're going to have 90 plus degree temperatures. And unfortunately, my air conditioning is not working until Wednesday.
Oh, no.
My gosh. So but at least I'm in my basement. It's always cooler in the basement. But Shelly, you're a Red Sox fan, and the Red Sox enjoying a nice resurgence this season, right? We're recording this to give everyone a reference point. May 23rd, they're in first place.
Yeah,
you're Red Sox.
It's really great. And I mean, I didn't really have like any questions about, you know, about the offense and you know, that they've been killing it. But what's really interesting is the pitching is really good, but
yeah,
it's not who you thought it was. Who you thought it was going to be. You thought it was going to be Eovaldi and Erod killing it. But it's like Garrett Richards and Nick Pivetta and Martin Perez is kind of holding his own. So it's kind of, backwards, but it's working. So I'm, no complaints here.
Yeah. Starting pitching has been better than expected, like you say. And then Chris Sale expected to make his return at some point this season. And it just seems like that kind of season for the Red Sox where they're just like, everything is like falling into place. Like they call up Danny Santana and the guy has a home run in each of his first two games, you know? So Alex Cora is back as manager. You got a nice core in Devers, Bogarts, and of course, Verdugo. Matt Barnes has been out of his mind as the team's closer. So, you know, I'm a Yankees fan, so I hate to see this, but congrats to you so far.
Yeah. But we haven't played you guys yet, which seems kind of odd seeing that it's, you know, almost June.
Yeah.
But those matchups should be pretty interesting later this summer.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we play each other in a week or two, but you're right. Quarter of the season gone and no Yankee Red Sox series. That's kind of odd. But and Scott, we don't want to forget about you. You're scrappy Tigers. I mean, they're no pushovers this season. They're great. Tigers, they're two games ahead of the Minnesota Twins. I mean, who would have thought that, like heading into June, that the mighty Twins would be behind the Tigers in the standings?
Baseball continues to make a lot of sense all the time. That's just how it goes. No explanation. The funny thing is they're doing well now, but like they seem to be this team that like at their best, they look scrappy and watchable. And then at their worst, I try to find something else to do so it's not so depressing. So I'm glad that this is one of those times where I can just watch the games and enjoy it. Something good might happen because they'll probably go on another 10-game stretch where they score like three runs.
Yeah. Do you think they found their long-term closer in Michael Fulmer getting the job done right now? I'm not really sure if he loves being the closer, but saying all the right things to the media and also kind of seems to have the right, not only skill set for the job, but also the right temperament for the closer's role as well.
Love seeing him hit 100. That's for darn sure. I mean, as whether or not he enjoys it a lot, I'm not sure is the biggest issue because I'm not sure he has a whole lot of choice, right?
Yeah,
like the Tigers have a bunch of starting pitching prospects that are going to be coming. They have some guys that have been doing a lot better than expected. If Fulmer wants to play, he's going to have to do it out of the pen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I hope he's enjoying it because he looks awfully good doing it. But if he doesn't, I mean, it's one of those things where sometimes you get assignments at work that you don't really want, but you got to do them. And it's the best way to earn your keep, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get started in some of the news that's been going on this week. Six no-hitters in the big league so far this season, seven if you count Mad Bums, 7-inning stint against Atlanta, and Scott Spencer Turnbull, who lost 17 games just a couple of seasons ago. 2019 throws a no-no against the Mariners. My guy, Corey Kluber, throws a no-hitter against the Rangers. And Shelley, we now have two no-hitters against Cleveland. We have two no-hitters against the Mariners, two against the Rangers. Is this what we should be focusing on? Is that the lead that you have, like, just a few teams that are just putrid offensively? Or is there more to it where, you know, the MLB deadened the ball, pitchers are pitching better, there's, you know, rumors and accusations that they're putting more stuff on the ball? What's the headline here?
I mean, I think it's like a combination of just everything. I mean, those three teams specifically, their lineups are pretty poor. And when they are all struggling, I mean, anyone can get them out. I mean, I could probably strike out, you know, some of the guys on the Rangers or something like that. I was reading a piece from The Athletic. I mean, you mentioned it, that pitchers are using more stuff and sticky mm-hmm. stuff. And just the spin rates are just out of control, right? It's just, and yeah, so I think it's that. I think it's poor offense. And just, it's early in the season, and we see pitchers usually are ahead of hitters in the early part of the season. And then once the warm weather heats up, and I guess, you know, pitchers are seen by teams second and three times, then that's when they start to get the feel for the pitchers, you mm-hmm. know, the hitters understand what's going to be offered. So I just think it's just a combination, like a perfect storm of just everything.
Right, right. Yep. And just to quantify it a little bit, CBS had some stats where in 2019, there were 1.39 home runs per game. And this season, it's down to 1.14. And strikeout rates for hitters, right now it's at 24.1%. And it's gone up every year since 2005. And 2005 was at 16.4%. So that's a pretty big jump. And it's getting to the point where, you know, guys like Clayton Kershaw, who make their living pitching, and Don Mattingly complaining about it. Don Mattingly saying that sometimes baseball is just unwatchable. Scott, it wasn't that long ago where the exact same trend was happening in reverse, though.
Yeah, and one, that article at The Athletic is fantastic. It talks a lot about a lot of cool things. For example, about how much spin rate has gone up and the mm-hmm. number of pitches with like a certain threshold of spin rate, how that is skyrocketing. There's only, you know, the sunscreen and rosin thing is not new, right? Like, pitchers have been using bullfrog sunscreen and rosin forever to like get some grip. But a thing that article points out, and I don't want to just spoil the whole thing, but there's new stuff out there too, right? Mm-hmm. Like stickier stuff. And right. and that changes a lot of things. That's been frustrating for a lot of hitters. But, you know, I think for me, a huge part of it has sort of been the teams and the approach of those teams. Like, the Rangers run a slow pitch softball lineup out there. Just a bunch of dudes who want to swing real hard a lot, right? So when they're not on, they are going to have these games where even if they do, like, they'll either get like no hit, or as a team, they'll have like 12 strikeouts through the game or more, right? So it's just like Shelley said, a combination of things in terms of the way hitters approach hitting. Sabermetrics has done a lot of things, and one thing it did was sort of like emphasize the home run, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's this great meme that's like, early on in baseball, you don't know anything, and you're just like, yeah, hit a home run. And then you learn all the sabermetrics, you get into all the stats, and you go through all these like feelings, and at the end, you're just like, yeah, hit a home run. Like, that's the best thing. So, like, as to hit home runs, you have to swing the bat awfully hard and awfully fast, mm-hmm. and that does lead to strikeouts. It's been a trope for a very long time, so... Mm-hmm. Combination of a lot of things, and you know, teams that want to hit for power are going to do this. More teams want to hit for power. They have young players, right? The Rangers have one player who's over 30, and it's Brock Holt in their starting lineup, right? And like, he's a platoon guy. This is going to keep happening a little bit. I'm just amazed it hasn't happened to the Tigers yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I say that, of course it will, but
if there's one guy in the Tigers that'll break up your no-hitter, it's Miggy. Come on. All right. So, Shelley, are we noticing any similar trends in the minor leagues yet where pitchers seem to be getting the best of hitters, or is it too early in the season to really start to see if that's a trend developing in the minor leagues?
We haven't really seen too many. I have seen like a few like combined no-nos, you know, down in like low A or something. But you know, that kind of happens. But there is one trend that I did notice so far this season. It is in low A, and it's stolen bases. Stolen bases are up, which is really interesting. And that league, they, you know, they expanded the size of the bases. So that's interesting. It's one of those changes that it seems to be working, if that's what they wanted to do. So they might, I will be looking forward to like next off season to see if they, if, you know, Major League Baseball makes a change and expands the bases for other leagues as
Interesting. Okay. Very good. So, Scott, you mentioned that the Rangers using like a slow ball method of pitching. That leads us to next topic that real quick that we'll talk about. Baseball's unwritten rules. Everyone's talking about them this week. So last season in a game, the Padres were leading 10-3. Fernando Tatis ignored his manager, Jace Tingler's take sign, swung at a 3-0 pitch and hit a grand slam against the reliever Juan Nicasio. So on Monday night, White Sox DH Yermán Mercedes comes to the plate with the Sox leading 15-4, works a 3-0 count, ignores the take sign from manager Tony La Russa, and launches a slow pitch, a 47-mile-per-hour pitch from position player Williams Astudillo. It launches into the outfield stands for a home run. Scott, are we making too much about these unwritten rules? Are they too old school?
Yes. Those things were awesome, right? Like, I love baseball, and those things were awesome, right? Like, I love seeing Williams throw that, like, 40-something mile-per-hour pitch and have it not be hit for a home run. And then I loved watching him pitch it and have it hit, be a home for, like, hit for a home run. I like all of it. Like, they could talk about their unwritten rules and their pride or whatever, but, like, number one, I've been on a lot of real bad, like, rec league sports teams. And the only thing that's more frustrating than, like, getting crushed is getting crushed and then they stop trying. And it's obvious, right? Like, I'm a grown person. Like, I don't need to be insulted, right? Like, don't just stand there with the ball in front of me. Like, at least shoot it, for God's sake, right? Like, I just want to just watch you be better than me. Like, at least do something. It's fun. I watch baseball to have fun, like, above all else. Like, I did that first, and then I started writing about it and playing fantasy sports and all that. But I do all that just to have more fun with baseball. If they're doing stuff that's fun, I'm not going to sit here and tell them that they're, you know, being rude because of some imaginary rules. Forget that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of watching, when was it, a few weeks ago, you had Rizzo pitching against Freeman in another blowout, you know, Anthony Rizzo. And the two of them were just, they couldn't keep a straight face, right? And I think Rizzo struck out Freeman. So, you know, baseball does have some issues, and I think that having some players just be who they want to be, have some personality, because that's kind of what Mercedes had said, you know, this is who I am, you know. So I don't know. Then they were talking about the run generated mercy rule. Shelly, do you like that idea? Like, you know, once a team gets a 10 run lead and maybe it's the seventh inning, they just say, okay, let's go home.
No, I don't like that. I mean, I didn't even like that rule when I was playing softball in the minor leagues, you know, in little league. Like, I don't like that. It's just like, just the game is nine innings, right? Just play. Yeah.
It makes sense in my son's little league because they stop that half of the inning if they scored five runs. So at some point it does become impossible, right? You're down 15 with two innings left to play, or only like 15 minutes. Cause like realistically they just play for a time limit. If we're not going to get that many innings done in time, you can call it if you want, but guess what? They still don't. They keep playing because it's a game and the kids like playing it. It's no different than the adults, right? They like, yeah, they get paid a lot of money and that's not a small point, but they like playing it. They enjoy baseball presumably. So like, let them play. Like, what are you turning it off for? Right? Like, I just talked about how annoying it is for someone to not be trying. The last thing I want to do is tell those guys, you can't win now, right? Tell them that. See how that goes, right? You ever tried to pull Scherzer off the mound when he's like giving up nine runs? He doesn't care. Like, he's not, if he doesn't think he's done, he wants to keep trying. Why would we stop the game?
Yeah. Scherzer pitching against the Yankees a couple of weeks ago, and he was on fire. And you're watching him in the dugout. He actually told the manager, okay, I'm done. You know, there was a question whether or not he was going to be taken out of the game, and he kind of stayed in the game. But then in between innings, you know, the cameras panned in on the dugout, and he said, you know, you could see that he mouthed the words, I'm done. So that's the little tidbit on Scherzer. How about the issue, and Shelley, I'll ask you, that when we talk about the example I gave with Tatis and this example where the players chose to ignore the sign from their manager, do you think that that is a little bit more of the issue as opposed to the fact that a player is swinging against the position player in an issue where guys just throwing 47?
It could be. I don't know about, you know, I don't know about TLR. I don't know about his reaction to it, but maybe with the Jace Tingler thing, maybe. I basically, because maybe I have a little bit more respect for Jace Tingler. But maybe just a little bit of it. But I mean, maybe he missed the don't swing sign, right?
Could be.
You don't know that. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe he wasn't looking. I don't know.
Right.
So, yeah, I just think people just need to just grow up and just have fun. It's a game. Come on. Get over
yourself. Grow up. La Russa said, hey, you know, Lance Lynn had said it took Mercedes's side on this. And La Russa said, hey, Lance has a locker. I have an office, you know, so which I thought was pretty funny. But how about for the home run derby this season? If Mercedes, like, put Mercedes in it and have Astudillo pitch to him, that would be must see TV, no?
Well, that reminds me of, like, that'll look awesome. Like the Josh Hamilton home run derby, right? It was the one where, like, his like high school coach or whatever was like pitching to him, and the guy's arm about fell off because he hit like 40 home runs. It wasn't 40; it was like 20 something. But like, poor Astudillo. Like, there's only so many times you can lob in a 40 mile an hour pitch and watch a guy hit it 500 feet.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. So, Scott, this happened after we finished recording our podcast last week. Albert Pujols, I was shocked when I saw it, signs with the Dodgers, and holding his own so far, though. Home run, and more importantly, 5 RBI in his first 6 games with the Dodgers. And the Dodgers have won all 6 of those games. I mean, how surprised were you when he signed with the Dodgers? I thought he was going to an American League team.
Yeah, the first thing I thought was, man, you know who really needs another bench bat? The Dodgers. Oh, what a great signing, right? Like, they have like a billion of them, and then they just go sign another one. It's great kind of because it's like they don't care anymore. They're like, oh, you know what? We'll just sign whoever we want. We'll do whatever we want. We're the Dodgers. Like, what are you going to do, right? Every single one of our guys still has like 40 options left, so who cares? We'll sign Pujols. We'll sell a couple jerseys. It'll be fun. Like, sure, right? They've got him, I guess. Like, you know, Rios is out for a while, so it doesn't impact him. Not that I think the Dodgers would really care that much. If they wanted Pujols, they just would have gotten him and told Rios to deal with it. Mm-hmm. But it's cool. I mean, like, that's all I have to say about it, is that it's cool. I'm not really thinking about it beyond
that. And they keep winning. That's the thing. You know, it doesn't matter who they put in, right? They could put me and you in, and they'd win.
Yeah, they go on like a slump with air quotes that my co-host can see here. And, like, they're still in first or, like, close to it, right? Like, oh no, the Giants. Are we going to be able to pass them? Like, yeah, give it a couple weeks. Like, good for them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, of course they sign some, like, 40-year-old guy, and he immediately starts hitting for them. Sure, it's the Dodgers, whatever.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to other news. Mike Trout out 6 to 8 weeks due to a calf strain. And Shelley, since he's been out, you've had Taylor Ward playing some centers, also Juan Lagares, Jose Rojas is playing right field, Justin Upton in left field. So based on Ward and Rojas's minor league stats, both have 290-plus career batting averages. I think they have some potential. But, of course, as soon as you hear that Trout's going to be out for a while, all our thoughts go to, hey, you know, when's Joe Adell coming up or Brandon Marsh? So Adell, last I checked, 6 home runs in his first 14 games, has a good WRC plus of 122, and we all knew that he had the power, still striking out 35.5% of the time. And Marsh being eased into action after his shoulder injury, batting 194 in his first 8 games, striking out also at a fairly high rate, 28% of the time. So what are we thinking in terms of Adele and Marsh? Do you think that the Angels could tread water for a while, you know, with Ward out there, who also has a pretty good minor league track record? Or what are we thinking about Adele and Marsh? When do you think that we could possibly see them?
I think it's going to be a while. Because the biggest thing, like with Adele, is definitely defense, but then also swing and miss. Like you said, he's hitting 246 with a 631 slug because he's hit he's hit so many home runs, but he only has 5 singles and he's striking out just as much as, well, not as much as in the majors last year, but he's still swinging and missing a lot. Mm-hmm. And that is what he needs to work on. He still needs to work on it, and he's not going to get better in the major leagues because that's like the best, you know, obviously the best in the most difficult place. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we're going to see Adele anytime soon.
No,
and we might see Marsh, but he's hitting 194. He's walking a lot, but he's also swinging and missing too. So he's not in a right place either. So I think that, you know, the Angels are just going to have to try to tread water with Ward and Rojas until these guys kind of just get a little bit better.
Gotcha. Okay. Scott, there was a trade. The Rays traded Willy Adames and pitcher Trevor Richards to the Brewers for relief pitchers J.P. Feireisen. Actually pretty decent reliever, 9 holds, 2 saves, and Drew Rasmussen. So my first thoughts went to Juan DeFranco and Vidal Brujan. And of course, that's not who gets called up. It's Taylor Walls, right? A bit of a speedster. Actually, I think he went 2-for-4 in his first game on Saturday night. Were you surprised about Walls getting called up?
In the sense that I can be surprised by the Rays when they do something, yes, right? Like whatever that maximum amount of surprise is from the Rays, like I'm that. But I should mention that that's not very high, right? Like it makes sense that they trade Willy Adames. Like they don't need another infielder. Like they needed another infielder like the Dodgers needed another bench bat, right? Like it's the same concept. They have all the ones they want, and they can all play like every infield position, right? Like even their outfielders, like Brandon Lowe, he could come in and he could do it. Like Brandon Lowe, he could come in and do it too. It makes sense for them. It makes sense a bit for the Brewers because they've been kind of not so sure what they're going to do at shortstop. They got rid of some of the guys that they've had for a long time, trying something new, good for them. Surprised that it wasn't, I was not surprised that it wasn't Franco, right? Like Juan DeFranco, I think they're going to wait. They just don't have tons of reasons to do it quite yet. They're still doing quite well in their division. It's not like they've been having too many problems. I think it'll be Brujan first, but you know, only when they feel like it. That's the thing about the Rays. They only do stuff when they feel like it.
Yeah,
like who's going to close? Whoever we feel like, right? Yeah. Like they don't, they certainly have a plan. It's just that they've done a pretty good job making sure none of us know what it is.
Yeah, there you go. Shelly, do you know what their plan is? I mean, I kind of, like I said, kind of thought Franco, Brujan. I thought maybe Brujan would come up first, you know, and also if you could just give us a little bit on Taylor Walls. Looks like he's more of a speedster, right? First 14 games I saw, he was batting 327, a couple of home runs, 10 RBI, and a couple of stolen bases. But do you have a gut feeling as in terms of when we could see either Brujan or Franco, and if you think it would be Brujan first?
I'll start with that first. I definitely think it's going to be Brujan first, but it's not going to be on the dirt. Brujan has played 10 games in the outfield, most of them in center field. And then when he does come on the dirt, it's been at third base or second base. So he's not going to be playing shortstop. And I honestly think that he is going to make his debut probably in like center field or something. And he's just having a crazy season, just hitting bombs left and right. It's awesome to see. He's stealing bases. So that's really cool. I was not surprised that they brought Taylor Walls up and not Franco. Basically because Franco is not on the 40 man and Walls is. But Walls is a really, really good, shortstop, second baseman. I think long-term his place is probably going to be second base. He kind of reminds me a little bit of, Nick Solak, not like a comp or anything, but like a, So like used to be in the Rays org, and he was just like a hitter. And this is what Walls is, just a hitter. He can hit. That he's done that every step of the way. It just really stinks that he's in the Rays org, because you know, Franco and Bruján get a lot more pub because they're better, but they're flashier and just really, you know, shiny stars and all that stuff. But Walls is really good, and I'm really excited to see him. I'm glad he went 2-for-4, you know, in his first game. I would probably, honestly, in fantasy, I'm probably looking to pick him up because I think that he's going to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe later on, if there are any players that come to mind in terms of, because I don't think the casual fan really don't know much about Walls, right? But there's got to be other prospects that are talented that don't get the publicity, you know, like you just mentioned, not the flashy kind of players or whatnot. So maybe if any come to mind, you know, before we cut out today, maybe you could just mention a couple. But just sticking with you in terms of prospects, in general, how many prospects do you think that it's safe to stash in standard redraft leagues? And I'm sure that that depends in part on the size of your league, whether it's a 10, 12, or 15 team league, no?
Yeah, it definitely does. I'm thinking, like, with the amount of injuries that we're seeing, a 10 team league, I would be really hesitant to stash any of these guys, because yeah, it's just, you kind of need to save some of the, you need to, you know, refill with all these injuries. So I don't think I would stash anyone in like 10. And then in 12 and 15s, yeah, sure. I'm in my Tout Wars league, I have Jaren Duran and stashed. Mm-hmm. And then I had Logan Gilbert stashed since the beginning of the season. So it's been a little bit rocky this week, but I think he'll turn around. But mm-hmm. yeah, in 12 and 15s, I think it's totally fine to stash a couple here and there.
Mm-hmm. Shocking that you would stash a Duran. He's a Red Sox, no?
Exactly.
Scott, the casual fan, should they be paying more attention to AA players now? Because it seems like more prospects are getting called up, you know, over the past year or two from the AA leagues. Or do you think that's just like a temporary change because of COVID, where, you know, you don't have like, you know, actual games being played?
It's hard to skip levels through the minor leagues. It's really hard. There's a finite number of players who can really do this with any kind of consistency, right? Like, how many Juan Sotos and Fernando Tatis Juniors are there out in the minor leagues at any given moment? Like one, maybe, like Wander Franco, right? Like how many players that caliber? So we've seen this quite a bit lately, but it's sort of, to me, like the bigger story is we've had this crazy influx of really high level young talent that are ready in their early 20s, right? Like, that is not something I expect to continue forever, right? Like, there's going to be years where it's drier than this. It's been really cool to see these guys, like a Juan Soto, come up at 19 and mash, right? Awesome. How many players do I think can do that in any given decade? Mm-hmm. Two? Like, we might get one more, maybe, right? Like, it's so, so difficult for players to be able to do this. Should you pay attention to AA? Like, yes, especially with the way that teams have been able to use alternate sites and give them more time with their MLB staff and, you know, have access to those MLB resources. Like, that's really cool. And so maybe we see it a little more, but I don't think there's going to be this like a long-term trend of players skipping AAA. Cause like, there's a reason guys like Joe Adell, who was at one time like the number one prospect in baseball, he's back in AAA because baseball's hard. And sometimes players need to go back to certain levels to practice certain skills. So should you watch it? Sure, but not necessarily more than you should have before, right? It's, if anything, it's just drawn attention that there are really good players in AA. And it's not necessarily a step-by-step-by-step. You go to low A, high A, double A, triple A, up. You can skip levels. Just keep in mind, that's really hard to do. You have to mm-hmm. be a very special kind of talent to be able to do that and show something that maybe we didn't even notice before, right? Like a Scooble did something that was really unexpected of him when he first got drafted. And was much, much better than a lot of people anticipated. And then, of course, had like a bunch of time in the alternate site. So they felt he was ready, and he's struggling. I wouldn't be stunned if he goes down for a little bit if they get into more of a roster crunch. It's not like they got a ton of pitchers right now, but it could happen. But it's hard to do. You watch it, please, because there's good baseball there. There's good players there. But don't expect this to be some like long-term permanent trend.
Hey, Shelly, how do you think that, you know, COVID has affected teams' processes for grooming their prospects? I mean, do you think that the way that they process their prospects has changed forever in terms of, you know, Scott brought up the alternate site, you know, a lot of teams are now using pitching and hitting labs. Do you think that they're going to continue to use the alternate training sites and whatnot? I mean, do you think that, and I know I'm only asking a lot of questions here, but do you think that players were able to benefit from using an alternate training site as opposed to, I mean, of course you always want to get game action, but were they able to still progress using the training methods from last season? And you think they'll continue?
I don't know if they're going to like do like alternate training sites. Cause I think most teams are probably just going to just stick with just in-game action. But I do think a lot of prospects, especially hitters, yes.
Someone agrees.
Someone definitely agrees. Ursula's like, yes, more baseball. Anyway, I do think that hitters really did get a lot out of these alternate training sites. I'll just default to the Red Sox, for example, like, because they streamed a lot of like their alternate site scrimmages last year. And, you know, like Tristan Casas, he was in low A in 2019, and he was able to face like AAA pitchers, major league caliber pitchers. And he said that really helped him because he saw better stuff that he's never seen before. And then he starts the season out in double A and he's hitting well. You know, he just went 2-for-4. I think he's hitting above 300. That's amazing. But going forward, I think teams are, I have seen a lot more teams use a lot of like these pitching labs. Like Seattle has like their gas camp or something like that. The Reds have driveline guys. The Twins are also doing like some really interesting things with pitchers and catchers, just doing all these different things. So I think a lot of teams are starting to go different routes instead of just coaching out, you know, in the field. Like they're doing a lot of like off-season stuff.
Mm-hmm. That was a great example. It seems that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the minor league system wasn't kind of like reset. There was consolidation there. Are there fewer teams or are they consolidated leagues, I believe, right?
Yeah. They took away about 10 to 20, wow, leagues, or not leagues, mm-hmm, teams. And they basically got rid of like the really, really rookie level ball, like the Appy League and the Arizona League. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they really, really condensed it.
The New York Penn League, they got rid of my Staten Island Yankees, which I was a little upset about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. But so do you think that because of that, you think that maybe some players will maybe opt to play more college ball? That could be their entry into maybe, I mean, not many players are going to jump from college ball to the major leagues. But, you know, if they can hook up with a minor league team, maybe play some college ball and try to show that they're talented enough.
Yeah, I think a lot more prep players would definitely go the college route because obviously there's not as many minor league roster
spots.
Right. But the cream always rises to the top, whether you start out in college or you start out in the minor leagues as, just right out of high school. And teams will find you because, I mean, teams, you know, pick up players, you know, out of, you know, out of like Asia and all these other places. So just as long as you're able to play, teams will find you. There's scouts all over the place. So honestly, it doesn't matter where you start. It really does stink that a lot of these teams got taken away. You know, like your Staten Island Yankees, for example, you know, it just really sinks when you've had a, because minor league baseball is so much fun.
Sure.
And when, you know, if you can't take your family or just go out and watch like a minor league game, that really stinks.
Mm-hmm. Scott, Shelley mentioned cream always rises to the top, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. Now, and I think we've spoken about this before, and Shelley could add on to this, but I'll go to you first, Scott. Do you think that with, you know, guys like Mercedes and Adolis Garcia, who are in their upper 20s and, you know, have spent a lot of time in the minor leagues and actually had some good success in the minor leagues, and then they've been able to transfer it to the big leagues, and the big leagues being, you know, copycat kind of sport, do you think that we're going to start to see teams kind of take a second look at some of the players that have might have been, like, you know, languishing in their minor league system and maybe not being able to call up? Maybe they were held back because, you know, they had a superstar player in front of them. But do you think that, Scott, that we're going to see a little bit more of that?
So Christian Walker was another one of these guys, right? That was like this quad A player for a long time, finally gets his shot, comes up with Arizona, starts hitting really well. The thing about this is, like, the White Sox didn't really want to give Yermín Mercedes a shot, right? They weren't super excited about it. They just had more and more hitters dropping like flies, right? Adolis Garcia is on a team that's, like, totally rebuilding and doesn't really care that much. Like, oh, well, he's old enough, right? Like, he can come up and play. We got to have somebody, and we don't necessarily need it to be our best player. It just needs to be a player we want to get a look at.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very contextual, these guys, right? Like, there's a reason they're buried, and there's a reason they get unburied, right? Yermín Mercedes got unburied because, like, five guys got hurt, right? Like, a lot of roster spots had to open up. So, like, you can't even give the White Sox that much credit. Like, it's great that he was in their system and he was, like, available for them to call up, and they eventually picked him. But, like, he wasn't the first prom date they asked for, right? Like, or the second or the third. He was, like, the fourth or the fifth. So... No, I don't think there's going to be some, like, yeah, I don't think there's going to be some big shift here. It's just going to be a thing that we're all going to be surprised by it. And it's going to be fun because it's baseball. Right. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like, it's not like there's like people that liked Yermín Mercedes, but, like, not like this. Right. Like, not as a 300 hitter for a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, that wasn't a thing. Right. So it's really cool. I'm glad we see it. We're always going to see it. It's always going to happen. And we're going to be surprised by it every time.
Yeah. Shelley, what do you think? And also, do you think that guys like Adolis Garcia and Mercedes, do you think they kind of, like, flashes in the pan? Do you think they could continue? Especially Garcia, when you look at his pedigree, he's a strikeout machine, wasn't he? Past, but hit a couple of home runs, I think, this past Saturday. Like I said, we're recording this on Sunday. So do you think that they can continue their success? And also, what I asked Scott, do you think that we're going to start to see teams kind of reevaluate some of the players that maybe they haven't promoted yet?
I don't think so. These guys, like, these, like, flashes in the pans, right? They show up on bad teams. I'm not talking about Mercedes is a special case, but these guys show up on just bad teams because, like, Garcia, like, I think he was, like, DFA by the Cardinals. Like, he was in the Cardinals system for a while. I'm pretty sure that Garcia looked pretty good on the Cardinals right now. But, you know, the Rangers take a chance on him, and he's doing really fun, really awesome things. I don't really think that it's going to continue on this pace because he's never really shown this much home run and stolen bases, you know, when he was with the Cardinals. So I just think that this is, like, really fun. But then when it comes to Mercedes, yeah, he was a catcher who couldn't catch, but now he doesn't have to catch. He can just mash baseballs. I think Mercedes is out of Mercedes and Garcia. I think Mercedes has a chance of actually doing this for the long term.
Yeah. Yankees have a catcher that can't catch in Gary Sanchez, but that's another story.
It's just worth noting that, like, Yermín Mercedes wasn't even the top catcher who can't catch prospect on the White Sox, right? They had Zach Collins.
Yeah,
like they thought he was going to be their catcher who can't catch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they went to their second catcher who can't catch for this to happen, right? Like, that's pretty deep in the well.
Yeah, yeah. Let's switch gears on actually evaluating prospects. We'll go to Shelley on this. Shelley, how much should we lean on the traditional batting and pitching stats when evaluating prospects? And, you know, are there any specific stats that do you think are more predictive than others in terms of when you do your evaluations? Like, for instance, like, are college stats useful in evaluating prospects' future success?
For college, kind of, sort of, maybe. Sometimes. like, I'll take a Jonathan India, for example. He was basically like a no-power guy down in Miami. You know, and then for his last year, he just went gangbusters with home runs. The Reds took him, I think, 6th, 7th, 8th overall. But he hasn't shown that power since. So sometimes you can just definitely take a look at the stat line for college players, and that's probably what you're going to get. But then sometimes, you know, stats lie. Or it's just, they don't lie. They just, you know, just don't really make sense, and that's not what it's going to be for the long term. As for me, when I'm, like, looking for interesting prospects, I definitely start out at stat lines. That's how I, you know, just find guys. For hitters, I like to look at weighted runs created plus, swing and strike percentage, ground ball, line drive, fly ball. But most importantly, age to level. Because if this is like a 24-year-old in A ball, I'm really not going to be impressed if he's mashing. Mm-hmm. He should be mashing, right? And then for pitchers, I look at K to BB, swing and strike, innings pitched like per game. And then again, age to level. And then once I find like a really interesting guy or two, I'll, you know, go over to like YouTube or Twitter and then look at him. Like I'll watch him and see what I think, because even good stat lines, you can watch a pitcher, for example, and you'll be like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. That doesn't look right. That looks like a reliever or something like that. So I kind of use both, but I definitely start out with just the number scouting.
Gotcha. Okay. Scott, any young players currently in the bigs right now that, you know, we've got Trevor Larnach, I mentioned Taylor Ward, even Corbin Martin got called up, I think, about a week ago, that you have your eyes on? Or, I mean, anybody that you're looking at right now in terms of a young player that, you know, even Kirilloff. I know because Kelenic has been slumping a bit, but anybody that caught your eye that you think might have eventual breakout potential?
Yeah, I actually want to talk about a guy who already broke out a little bit and then didn't and is sort of doing it again, and that's Akil Baddoo, right? I mean, he's probably the prospect I watch the most. But so the thing about Baddoo, he comes up and just like sets all kinds of crazy records, does his first everything in the course of like three games, right? Like his first home run, his first grand slam, his first walk-off. He like does this all in his first three games. Then he really starts to struggle a bit, because that's what happens. Players have to adjust, right? Like even if you go, I mean, I talk about rolling charts all the time because I love them. But you look at every player, Juan Soto, Mike Trout, everybody, Ronald Acuna Jr., everyone. It's up, then down, then up. Because what happens is they do something good because they're really good. Pitchers change how they approach these players. You know, maybe they see something. Maybe the player's going through some sort of like physical ailment. Like it's not on the injury report, but, you know, the quad's been a little sore, something, right? Comes down, then comes back up. And the story of a player's career is often like, how quickly do they come back up? How low do they go when they're down? How high do they go when they're up? Like that's the kind of trajectory you want to see. And Baddoo went really, really high to start, right? Like he couldn't stop hitting home runs. He couldn't stop hitting for power. Then he goes on this long stretch where all he does is strike out. Pitchers start approaching him differently. Something that Shelley talked about earlier, like these guys that come up and jump multiple levels to get to the big leagues, they've never seen guys that can throw a slider and a curve and a change for strikes that are good, right? Like most pitchers they see can do one of those things, maybe, right? Or like have all three of those pitches be good, but can't hit the strike zone, right? Like that's a huge change. So he starts doing this. The Tigers start protecting him a little, only putting him in against righties, you know, keeping off against lefties. And sure enough, it's starting to come back now. The strikeouts have come way down in May, right? Like way down. He's got one game where he had a bunch of strikeouts where he went, he had like a three strikeout game. Otherwise it's way, way better. the power, of course, isn't where it was because, like, no one can hit for that kind of power over an extended period of time. But he's making hits. He's making adjustments. That's what I look for when I watch prospects. I'm no Shelly V, right? But what I do want to see is how players change, right? Because they're going to slump initially. Mike Trout famously struggled for a while, but they make the change, right? When I'm looking at Joe Adell's stat line in the minors, I'm looking for that change, right? Like, defense is something that's hard to scout via box scores. You have to watch. But I am watching to see how that approach changes. How does that strikeout rate change? What if the strikeouts don't change, but he starts walking more? What do I think about that? With Bedu, what I'm seeing is a lot fewer strikeouts, a few more walks, which is nice, but he's striking out a lot less. And because he's doing that, because he's at least making more contact, he's hitting into outs instead of letting those outs hit the catcher's glove. That's where I think he can start making real progress. It's still going to be tough, right? He's still a guy who jumped levels. He's still a guy who is going to struggle against lefties for a while, but I've got something to watch now. And even if 2021 isn't quite the year for Akil Baddoo, like, I do think that speed, which he's shown off a lot lately, already 3 stolen bases this month, I think those are the things I'm looking for. So even if it's not till like late this season or 2022 where he breaks out, a lot of people are just going to remember how he started hot and then was really cold for, you know, 3-4 weeks.
Right.
I can't really stash him on like a 10 or a 12, but he's really a guy I'm watching.
Yeah. That's a great name to bring up too, because I'm sure that plenty of fantasy players have dropped him, you know, since he's been cold. But Shelly, anybody stand out to you that's actually in the majors right now that you think that could have a breakout? You know, we were talking about last week, Scott and I, James Caprillion, Oakland A's starter, actually been pitching pretty well in his two starts. His first start, went 5 innings, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. And then his second start, 5.2 innings, 9 strikeouts with 1 walk. But anybody sticking out to you that you think that is already in the majors and is ready to kind of take off?
I guess I'll talk about the two twins, Larnach and Kirilloff. I just think that these guys are going to hit. They have been hitting. Larnach got off a little bit slow, but he's starting to come around. Honestly, it's the same thing with Kirilloff. Like, he started off the season pretty slow. Well, when he was caught up, he started off pretty slow. And then he started to, like, really just hit balls out the park, you know, doubles, singles, just hitting, just... and then he had that wrist issue. But then in his two rehab games, he hit 2 bombs, comes up, and he's hitting again. These guys are just really going to hit. And then also Corbin Martin.
Yeah.
I think this guy is going to be really good for the Diamondbacks. You know, he came over in the Zach Greinke trade. I have him actually stashed in a couple of like my dynasty leagues because, you know, he had TJ and a lot of the, you know, fantasy managers who had him rostered dropped him because that's usually what happens. With, you know, prospects who have TJ, and then there was COVID, so you didn't see him for like 2 years. So I have him actually on like a lot of dynasty rosters, and I just think he's going to be pitch really well for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, it's a good post-hype sleeper from a couple of years ago. I kind of agree with you in terms of Martin. Scott, and then we'll go back to Shelly. Scott, is there anybody that you're looking at that hasn't been promoted yet? Anybody that's caught your eye in terms of prospects that you're looking to, just looking to see if they can make an impact this season?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of guys who are going to get called up. When I write the batter's box, like, pretty much the two comments I always get are like, one, you forgot about this guy. And it's like, no, I didn't. I wrote about 20 guys. I can't write about 25, right? the second one is always something about, like, this prospect just came up or this prospect's going to come up soon. And what do I do? The guy I get asked about the most, and I'm not going to say too much because I'd rather defer a lot of this to Shelly, but, you know, Jaron Duran, he's the guy I probably get asked about the most right now. I wonder, like, when and where that opportunity is going to come. I know it's going to happen soon. I know he just hit, I think he just had a 2-home run game pretty recently. It's the thing where he's going to come up. The real question, and I know this isn't answering your question at all.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
About who do I think is going to come up and be good. I think the real key is thinking a lot about your league context and what this player can do to make an impact in that league context. I said this last week. I'm going to say it again. There are very few guys in any given year that can come up and have a long-term impact on a 10 or 12 team roster. Right? That's really hard to do. There's a finite number of solid major leaguers who can do this. Right? Like, AJ Pollock gets cut and added several times throughout the season in a 10 or 12 team league. And we already know what he is, right? There's not even questions. So I guess what I'd say is there's lots of guys I'm watching for the little bits of time that they come up. But in those more shallow leagues, I'm really playing it by ear. Who do I think is going to come up in the next few weeks, right? Then I'll stash him for a while. But, I mean, like there's Wander Franco, who's a guy that I'd just be stashing, right? Mm-hmm. Because like he has a huge potential impact. Brujan's the other guy. I think he's going to come up sooner. I think that he can do some things that you might need in a fantasy league. But, you know, for me with Jarren Durant, I think he could be really good. Mm-hmm. It just might take a little while. And I'm not sure how much his stat line will impact you in a 10 team league. Right. Just because mm-hmm. that's hard to do. That's a huge, like, that's a really high bar.
Yeah. So as we wind down, Shelly, give us some names. We know the more famous, we'll say, quote unquote, guys like Alek Manoah, you know, starting pitcher for the Blue Jays, who's just been pitching out of sight. Right. And you mentioned Duran. Any other names that we should know about that you think that will be up this year and have some type of fantasy impact, maybe a Heliot Ramos from the Giants outfielder? Or, I mean, it doesn't look like we're going to see Bobby Witt anytime soon, right? That's another prospect that everyone talks about a lot. And Julio Rodriguez, Mariners outfielder, people talk about a lot. And Adley Rutschman, catcher for the Orioles. But educate us. Tell us about a couple of the guys that you're looking at.
Definitely, I think Manoah, I think he comes up this wow. week. I just saw on Twitter that Anthony K was optioned to AAA. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is it Manoah time? Because I think that he's one of those guys that might actually hit the ground running. I just remember watching him in spring training against actual like major leaguers. It wasn't like, you know, the low A guys, and he was blowing them away. So I'm really excited about him. Jarren Durant, I do think that he comes up. I think he comes up sometime in June, though, maybe later June, because the Red Sox are still being like, well, he just got to AAA. He needs a little bit more work. And I totally understand. I don't think that there's anything, you know, wishy-washy going there. Someone else. Owen Miller for mm-hmm. Cleveland. He was, I think, just promoted today. He kind of reminds me of like a Taylor Walls type. Maybe with less mm-hmm. speed. So a good average play there. And it's Cleveland needs someone who can actually hit. So Owen Miller's pretty interesting. And then someone who played last year, Edward Olivares of Kansas City, AAA. He is absolutely demolishing the ball right now. And I have no idea what Kansas City is doing and not calling him up. So I think that he might get the call here soon as well.
How about Jesus Sanchez, outfielder for the Marlins?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's been absolutely mm-hmm. killing it. And I've been surprised with just how well he's mm-hmm. playing. He's hitting for average. He's hitting bombs, stealing bases. And the Marlins need some help. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So, Jesus Sanchez, he came up last mm-hmm. year too. So, yeah, I think that he'll probably get the call too. Yeah, it's good name. Yeah,
thanks. That's want to appreciate you coming on with us, Shelly, and give yourself a plug. Where can everyone find you?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. This was great fun. Sorry about my Frenchy noises in the background.
That's all.
You can find me on Twitter, ShellyV_643. I write for Pitcher List. I write for the Dynasty Guru. And if you care about what I think about Red Sox, you can go over the Monster SB Nation site. I write and talk about Red Sox there.
There you go. And like I said, thanks for taking part of your Sunday out. Like I said, we recorded this Sunday the 23rd. And Scott, you care about what Shelly thinks about the Red Sox, right?
I care about what Shelly thinks about anything.
There you go.
Right? Like the number of times I've talked about Tarek Skubal on this podcast, even though it's mostly a hitting podcast, is embarrassing. And it's actually all because of Shelly, right? Like I remember the Tigers were like just begun their rebuild. And I was like, Shelly, give me some sort of hope. She's like, they've got this guy, Tarek Skubal, who's only pitched a couple games so far, but lots of strikeouts, real electric stuff. And here I am like 2 years later with a binder full of Tarek Skubal baseball cards and just like tuning in every time he comes on. So, he, you know, obviously he's not an all-star yet, but I'm just waiting, right? So, Shelly, I'm so glad you could come on. Huge fan of everything you do. So I really just came on so that I could hear all this stuff like a day or two before everyone else. Like that was a huge thing that I wanted to get out of this. Like, I get all the advice before everyone else. So like, if you're in one of my leagues, which you might not be, but whatever, I've already made these ads. Tough break, guys.
All right. So thanks everyone for listening in. Thanks to Shelley. Thanks to Scott. Hope you were informed. Hope you were entertained, because that's our goal.
Are you not entertained?
You could follow me at Joe Galina. Follow Scott at If the Chew Fits. And like Shelley mentioned, at ShelleyV_643. You could follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. Follow at Pitcherless Pods, and you'll be informed anytime a new episode drops for any of the great podcasts on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Subscribe to Hacks and Jacks on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a stellar 5-star review. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.